Mike, A is for apple, B is for basil, C is for
chives.
No.
Yes, I love it with sour cream butter on a baked potato. You know, you can put those in a air fryer for 20 minutes.
Mike, this isn't a cooking show. C is for clematis.
Cranberry?
Cranberry?
Clematis is a plant.
Well, it's a vine.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, clematis comes from the Greek word climbing plant.
It really? I mean.
So I've been told.
You must have done some homework on this. Why didn't you tell me we were going to talk about clematis? Are we going to talk about clematis
today?
You
know, I've been doing clematis homework and talking to people in the store for a couple of weeks now. And
a little bit of knowledge.
Yes.
Okay, what did you learn?
I learned in the language of flowers.
Oh, God.
Clematis means intelligence. So that's why your last name is not Clematis.
You know, we
nor had, mine.
we had a, when I was working over at your wife's store, the nursery center, there was a very stuffy person that came in. I mean, snob as all could get out.
Yeah.
You know how she pronounced it?
Here we go.
Clematis. I wonder where your clematis are or your clemati. What the heck? It's a clematis. Let's just go. Okay, we know where it is. Let's show her. She wasn't happy with any of those. We had like 12 varieties of them there. She was looking for a specific. Well, order a specific, lady. Anyway.
And then it sounds like she's a queen looking for clematis because clematis is known as the queen of climbers.
You know, you did a lot of research so far. Okay, I'm not going to be the expert on this. I'm going to ask you questions.
No, don't ask me questions. I only know what I wrote down.
Oh, well.
So if you want to lean over and look at my paper, then ask me questions. Yeah.
No, I can get enough on my own.
I can get an A+ on that.
Okay.
We all know, since this is gardening in the Midwest, they obviously are going to survive in our zones, so they will survive in zones 4 through 9.
Well, actually 11.
They'll do 11?
Yeah. Certain ones will do 11. I also did a little bit of research. Yeah.
So you got to be careful when you're looking for a clematis.
Well, look for the hardier ones, and that has to do with, you know, direction of sunlight that they're going to need. Now, all right, Mr. Brainiac, you did your homework. What kind of sun/shade conditions do they need? And I'm talking need. This is a clematis. This is something that people tend to think that they have to be a little bit more ginger and tender with.
So here's what I found out. There's a little bit of a sticking point with sun and shade. Clematis like to grow in partial shade, but flower best in full sun.
Conundrum.
Okay. So ideally, the plant should be in the sun and the root in the shaded zone, either by some material, mulch even maybe, or just shade of other plants would help it. And this is, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves on this, but
well, at least
since you brought it up.
Well, okay.
It is very important to plant these where they're going to best succeed, not only because of sun and that, is because they are long-lived and don't like to be moved.
No, they're finicky. Kind of like, with us with the fig trees here, when you move them, they'll drop all their leaves and hold their breath.
So not only do you have to compare sun versus shade, you got to consider where you're planting it, how you're going to support the vine because it wants to climb up something. I mean, that's the whole point of this in flower.
Okay.
So that's two things that you have to keep in mind when you go to plant your clematis.
Okay, you said sun, but shade for the roots. Or didn't you say that?
I said that.
Okay.
And the shade can be not necessarily a physical man-made thing. It could be shade from other bushes.
From what you're telling me, and that you've learned that the plant needs the sunlight for the flower.
Every plant does.
That's what I was going to get to. Boy, I hate, you know, a little bit of knowledge goes, that creates damage, man. That's trouble. But anyhow, every plant needs sunlight for it to flower. And every plant does have a flower, whether it's noticeable or not. But does every plant need the cool, shaded soil?
No. I'm going to stop you there and just say no.
Okay.
And here's what I'm going to say, because people were talking about, from my discussions and my research, people were talking about, you know, clematis is like, you know, what is the phrase? Head in the sun, feet in the shade. Isn't that kind of true almost of every plant? And to some degree, obviously.
Well, there's...
But yeah. Hold on a second. Hold the bus.
I'm holding my breath. All right, go.
It's not really totally true, because when the growers are planting and watering and bringing these plants to life so they're sellable at a good size, it's in a greenhouse. A lot of them have them on not cool areas. They're on like a black fabric or on the sliding trays up above. I mean, the greenhouse is hot, so the root system in a plastic container, probably, most likely. I know that's what ours come in, because the others are delivered with mesh pots. But I'm going as long as I can. Mike's trying to hold his breath.
Thanks, Scott.
But those are hot. Both the top and bottom are hot. So I find that a little untrue.
Well, see, now you know what you do. You don't, maybe, because you're one of the MGRs over there. But what basically is being done, you're maintaining them on a regular basis. The reason that they like it cool, and let me backtrack a little bit. All plants need it cool from moisture, from water. I mean, from nutrients that they can have transported up. The clematis just doesn't like to get their feet hot. Most of the plants that you and I deal with, for instance, let's say a succulent, doesn't need cool anything.
Right.
You got a cactus out there, let it heat on. Come on, baby. But when you get down to the more delicate plants, and I don't want to infer that a clematis is delicate to freak anybody out, but what I'm suggesting here is that when you keep it cool, therefore the moisture is in the soil, therefore the nutrients are going to be transported, therefore you're going to be able to allow it to breathe a little bit easier from the roots. Now, what do you use to put on the soil or in the soil to keep the roots cool? Have you done your homework on that?
People have tried putting items in particular on, you know, other than using shade of other plants to keep the roots cool.
Okay.
If you're talking where you just have a climbing trellis and it's right out there in your landscape, people have tried doing like clay pots or cute little things planted in the garden, so to speak, that would shade the roots from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
However, what they have found, this one gentleman disagrees with doing this because he's tried it, but he got clematis wilt.
Okay, that's a fungus.
Yeah, which we can talk about.
Or excuse me, a virus.
We can talk about diseases later.
All right.
But he thinks that that man-made object was keeping the humidity up and therefore a lack of airflow too down at the base. And therefore, he got the fungus, or the wilt, I'm sorry.
The wilt, right.
What were you going to say?
Well, first of all, it's environmental. Like you had stated right there, with the, when they put the clay pot around the clematis itself, it retains and keeps that moisture in, which was counterproductive. You got extremely humid conditions. You're going to end up weakening that plant. And that the weakening of the plant is going to make it more susceptible to a number of things.
What were you going to say that you were going to actually put in the soil or whatever to keep it cool?
It was not in the soil. It was on the soil.
All right. What is it?
This is from the Chicago Botanical Gardens recommendation. Spring of 1990 through the fall of 1995 was experimenting with what they considered to be probably the best clematis for this area, for the Midwest, whether it's from the Pennsylvania line going all the way to Wisconsin. And we're in the Great Lakes region. But they said that, like you had stated, head in the sun and feet in the shade, but also the way to keep it cool is to stay away from too much mulch. You can use the mulch, but then that helps to evaporate in there and it collects on the bottom of the leaves and you're going to have some wilt problems because of it. So they recommended pea gravel around the base of the plant or slate, flat rocks around it. Not even slate. You can do a white limestone or something around the base of it so that the plant is coming from the center of, let's say you stacked a couple of flat slate or flat limestone all the way around it and let the clematis just shoot up.
I've seen pictures of this. So,
oh, you have?
Yes, I have.
Well, so it basically keeps it shaded.
Right.
Not necessarily cool. I mean, it'll keep it cool also. But right. What here's the deal is anything, it reflects the sunlight. Therefore, the heat is going to be dissipating more so. If you use dark, let's say if you're using black slate, right. That's going to absorb the heat, and that's going to cook the roots. Stick with things that are going to be light. Pea gravel is one of them that's going to be lighter, light gray, that sort of thing. It's going to allow moisture to get through. It's going to allow the roots to stay cool. It's going to allow evaporation, too. So I think that's a win-win.
So it's very interesting that with my landscape around the pool, and I have red lava rock, that it will take, if the plant survives a year, it will take another year to become what you want it to be. I notice with the lava rock and that heat absorption, which keeps it warm, you know, through half the night again, it never gets a cool down position, but it takes a little while for that plant to acclimate to the red lava rock. So
usually by the third year,
clematis may not do good in the lava rock.
I really wouldn't recommend that. I would recommend something that's going to be of a lighter color. Again, they're recommending heavy, the pea gravel, or something that's of a slate-type shape, not necessarily the black slate.
So we got a little technical as we get on this show.
Duh.
So let's backtrack and go to why clematis?
Hey, we'd like to thank Black Diamond Garden Centers for sponsoring your Midwest Garden. We record this podcast on site at the Toledo location amidst all the smells of budding flowers, the manures, the chicken schmutz, you name it. If you're in the Toledo or Perrysburg, Ohio area, please stop by either Black Diamond location for all your gardening needs. And remember, ask someone who knows. Okay, now why? Do you have a specific reason?
The clematis, every time I see them on the benches for sale when people come in, they remind me of a tropical, something I could do in my tropical backyard type of deal.
Well, you could incorporate it into yours.
Yeah, I mean, it looks tropical and it's perennial. And I'm like, man, that'd be cool. Anything perennial that looks tropical, it makes it easier on Scott while you're prepping everything else out back.
You know what? You're showing the world up with all of your flowers that are out there. And they're basically, I mean, from your hibiscus all the way down. Now, I could see a few clematis that could go back there if you wanted to in the very, very, very back where you've got that thick, dense, hemlock trees. You could probably have them climb up on the outside of that. And that would be something that would be a novelty, but it's also a perennial.
I'd have to knock those ugly hemlocks all the way down. Hey, there's a good idea. Oh. Anyway, so the clematis.
Sorry.
That's why I've wanted to do a show on clematis, because it's one of the first things in spring that people ask for. And they come in early, and by midsummer, I'm like, wow, these really look nice.
Do you mind if I kind of contradict what you said? Not that you were wrong. There's nothing wrong with it. But see, I think of them as being lacy and delicate, which they aren't. I mean,
Wait, let's back up this again. Whenever you ever ask permission to be...
Hey, I'm secure with it. I'm secure with it, okay?
To correct something I've said.
Oh, to correct. It wasn't that I was correcting you. No, it's just that I'm going the other direction.
Yeah, all right.
And I'm secure with that.
So you've heard through the grapevine that people are afraid of clematis because they think they're too delicate to grow. And they
do bad things to them.
Gotcha.
Now, for instance, a lot of people cut them down every year.
Yeah.
Please don't do that. Please just trim them. I mean, in the fall,
right?
I mean, people, well, they're getting too bushy and I got to cut them down in order for them to sprout new. They're going to continue to sprout new regardless if you cut them down or whether you, because it's going to shock the heck out of them. They have a crown, like a grass plant, like a rose bush. But basically, if it's starting to get lanky and climbing over the fence and it's sending out these feelers, just whack those down. I mean, it's going to stimulate. It's like any type of pruning, period.
I imagine if you spend enough time training a vine to grow on a trellis or an overhead walkthrough deal and
arbors.
Then why would you cut that all the way down? Because One thing I was looking for to see how fast they grow, and I couldn't find if they're a fast grower or a slower grower.
It depends on the variety, too.
Okay. So that's
now, a fast grower is the autumn blooming one, which is what we call autumn.
Before you get into that, let me hit you with this. Officially, I'm going to say that clematis plants fall into three different categories.
Hit me with them, buddy.
They're based on when they bloom. So group one, you have your spring bloomers. Group two is repeat bloomers. And group three is your fall bloomers.
Yeah, I like the way you said repeat, because they don't bloom continuously all summer long and all season long. They'll stop. You'll have a late spring. There'll be a gap of a little bit of a, you know, a lull. And then you'll see them start to produce again.
So a second wind.
Right, right. That's because they got their feet cold and their head in the sun. Did you do number three yet?
Yeah, the fall bloomers.
The fall bloomers. Now, that's the one that I was insinuating. That's the autumn blaze or the autumn glory.
Glory.
And that's the one that's going to bloom white for you.
Autumn blaze is like 100-foot.
Oh, that's a tree. That's a maple tree, yeah.
They're gorgeous. You were asking again and about why I was attracted to this plant.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So they got cool petal structure. It's like a star-like bloom. Some of the most common colors here are white, pink, red, blue, and purple.
Yes, yes. Or they get the variegated flower where it's going to have, let's say, for instance, a pink that's going to be on the outside and then work its way down to that stripe of a darker, almost a red color. I mean, there's a number of them that are going to do that. You know, there's a yellow one, pink flower, yellow stamens.
And then they also have, you also have the petal, and then you have the stamens, which can be a different color than the petal. And
yeah,
it's like a two-layered effect. And that's also really cool.
For you guys and gals that are wondering what he's talking about, the stamen is that little buttery dot, that little button that's in the center of the flower. You got the petals on the outside, the stamens on the inside. And that's part of the attraction to the plant also, because they're really pronounced.
Were you going to say buttercup? Did you slip and say buttercup?
Well,
and
why you calling would me you... buttercup, do not, no, no, no. But I remember seeing what was Ermy from Full Metal Jacket, and he called these guys buttercups. Well, what buttercups are, they're a perennial flower. They're actually related to the ranunculi family. Ha, ha, ha. We're not going to talk technical here, but it's basically related to, and the buttercups themselves. And the buttercup, it doesn't get large, and it doesn't vine upward. So I don't know where in the world they came up with the comparison that it's related to the buttercup. How is it related to the clematis, or how is the clematis related to it? I guess botanically. But when it comes to hardiness, it's as hardy as the ranunculi or the perennial buttercup flower. So you don't really have to worry. If the plant isn't doing well, it's usually an environmental thing, or something that you're doing wrong. Because that thing can turn into a weed at any time that you'd like it not to. All right, you're going out into your backyard and you're incorporating things according to time of year that they flower. For instance, certain perennials aren't going to flower all season long. But now how do you know when this clematis is going to, let's say if I want something that's going to bloom for most of the season, let's say mid-summer all the way through to the fall.
Yeah, I honestly don't know, because I knew you would probably do that part of the homework, so I kind of skipped it.
Well, no, you could skip it, because I did too, because you're not going to know unless you read the tag. Make sure that they have the tags on them.
So you have to do a little bit of homework into each variety that is offered to you at your garden
for
center.
For the most part, all clematis are going to be, well, the ones that we basically will pick out for the Midwest, they will grow in a zone 4 through 11. They can get up to 12 to 15 feet in height if you don't do any of the trimming on them. Blooming time, I would strongly recommend. If it doesn't have a tag and it's on sale, hey, grab it and, you know, find out for yourself.
Yeah.
But always read the tag, because they leave you kind of a generic realm as to when it's going to bloom. It'll bloom late spring, early summer, and then you'll see that they have the gap in there, and then they'll say late summer, early fall. So they got a resting period in between. Some are going to start from late spring and go all the way through to early autumn. So it's a characteristic of the plant that we aren't going to be able to force. They're just going to do their own thing whenever they can and however they want to, but they are gorgeous.
and how much sun they get, because they are blooming wise very sun dependent.
Yes. Yes. Now, what can they attach themselves onto? You did that earlier.
Yeah, you know, the whole kind of the point of a clematis vine and doing it is to put it on a trellis, to put it on a mailbox.
If you have an ugly fence, put a couple of clematis 8 feet apart from them, because they can spread 4 foot. So, you know, if you want them to fuse together, that's cool. You can have a blue clematis combined with a pink or a white, you name it.
So the whole point of, I mean, it's a climbing plant by definition, so that's why you are planting it. It was kind of interesting, which I personally, because I'm a little OCD, I would never put a clematis to grow through or up shrubs or trees.
Why not?
To me, that just looks like unkept.
Oh, I think it looks cool. See, that's where you are day and I am night.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not the partier anymore.
And somebody has a full moon going. like if you have stone walls or brick wall outside or stuff, I personally wouldn't do it against the house, because we've talked in other episodes about vines. I think that was season 3.
God, you got a great
memory. Where the vines are just going to do damage to your house.
But these don't have the crawlers. I mean,
Well, okay. So we can get them. You want to go there now?
No, I'll wait until you're ready.
Okay. I'm ready.
The crawlers on the clematis, yeah, they will become invasive, but they have to have something that they can attach to. They don't attach to, let's say, brick, stone, or concrete like, let's say, Baltic ivy will.
Yes. So what I found, the leaf stems are pretty short. So you have to do a trellis or something to offer a gripping option.
And you have to train them.
You have to train them, because the item you want your clematis to wrap around needs to be no more than a quarter to a half inch thick, like a rod. And because of the leaf stems being so short, because a clematis vine does not climb by twining around something.
Ooh, like you're learning good.
Like a morning glory does.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it has to wrap around.
It has to wrap its leaf stems around the item.
So, and it's not the stalk. And
it's not the stalk. It's the leaf stems. And since the leaf stems are short, it needs to be a smaller material that you want it to climb up.
That's why chain link fences, that's why the trellis, that's why they're recommending things of that nature so that they can attach themselves
and
to it.
And let's say you have a nice trellis. Why couldn't you get some chicken wire and put that around or on the trellis or the arbor, and then have the clematis climb that, attach itself to that?
The reason is because people don't have the patience of a saint. They want that immediate gratification. It's going to take about 3 years, like you said. The first 2 years, you're going to get the nice flowers on it, but you're not going to have the thick, dense plant that's going to be climbing up unless you have the patience of a saint. Now, the third year, this sucker is going to kick in like gangbusters.
First year, sleep. Second year, creep. Third year, leap.
Where in the heck are you finding these out?
Well, Johnny said that a couple
of times. That's his brother-in-law.
Who works at the...
at the other
Waterville
store.
Yeah. We have 3 stores now. He said that on one of the podcasts
that we added on there.
He was on.
That's right.
Yeah. And that is a true statement for more than just fruit trees or trees themselves. I mean,
that's almost everything.
Almost everything.
With the exception of the annuals that we get. Now,
there's something
when you were talking about how maybe the chicken wire to put on a trellis, well, that's going to look a little, yeah. Have you seen of the people that are doing, whether it's for peas or clematis, they would use twine up and down the trellis itself, mm-hmm, or the arbor.
Yeah.
That is less than a quarter of an inch thick, but it gives the leaves for the clematis ample area for them to attach themselves to and climb onto that. Once they do that, then they start to fill in the voids on the trellis or the arbor, or let's just say the chain link vents. For instance, this is an excellent substitute for a plant that is now considered to be an extremely invasive plant, but it was beautiful and it smelled great and it drew bees. People didn't like it. That's the honeysuckle.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're not going to find any real, you know, not in the Midwest, selection of honeysuckle unless you complete ignorance. But then the states themselves will come back and penalize and fine, let's say, the nurseries that are selling them.
Yeah,
Because it is invasive.
I miss the honeysuckle that we had at my house where I grew up.
And you could smell that. You could pick the flower and taste it.
Oh, we used to sit in the porch and pick them. And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's considered invasive. So, okay, you're not going to sell it anymore.
Here's another interesting point that Mike would like because he's into plant medicine.
Oh.
Clematis is considered an herb.
Yeah.
And
it's herbaceous.
People use parts that grow above the ground, not the roots. They use it for joint pain, headaches, varicose veins.
You're kidding. How do they do that?
Syphilis.
What?
Gout, bone disorders.
Now, has it worked for any of these? I don't know too many people.
I don't know. I didn't go much further into that because
I like the idea that, you know, the plant is utilized for something other than just being pretty.
It's a busy time of year again where I'm doing my TV gigs and the garden center gigs and a podcast and
the grandfather gig.
And we're writing for the Sylvania Advantage newspaper. Right. So you guys can all do your homework on that, on using the herb clematis as a medicinal treatment.
If you wanted to, the old ones that our grandmothers used to put down and to let them grow and to leave it alone, she didn't bother touching them. You know, if she wanted to trim it, she would trim it usually in late autumn. She wouldn't cut it all the way down. But there's one called the Jackmani that is harder than the Dickens. It's purple. It's a deep, deep purple. And it's going to flower for you from late spring all the way through into autumn. Now, that one is if you can look for a Jackmani clematis, and you go out there, and if you got kids or anything, or dogs that like to go and mark their territory in the clematis itself, this is probably going to be one of the hardiest ones next to the autumn glory. I mean, it's just one of the good old fashions. So if you're going to look for it, and what I'm really going to recommend, there used to be stores that were selling them in like 3.5-inch square boxes. It was like a 6-inch box, 3.5 inches square, and it was wrapped in a paper bag. Avoid those by all means. All those are as cuttings that basically are not going to, they have a difficult time trying to take root. You can go ahead and try to use one of those. They're less expensive than the 1-gallon containers. However, the success ratio for the 1-gallon containers is extremely well. You're going to get your money's worth out of it.
Nice. We were talking about where to plant, basically because of sunlight, coolness, and they don't like to be moved. They also, and something to consider, they love acidic conditions. So they prefer a pH of 6.5.
Well, that's more neutral.
Yeah, well, slightly acidic.
Okay.
Then, but so that's something else to consider.
Now, let's put it this way. The same thing that you're putting down for the vibrance of the color and the hydrangea, you can put down for the clematis itself. For instance, you can get a product that is a little bit of acid incorporated into the fertilizer. It's a water-soluble nutrient. I mean, well, let's just go with the Miracle-Gro product. It's called Acid Grow. Use 1 tablespoon per gallon of water. You put it at the base of the plant. Don't do it early. Don't do it late when it's hot in the summertime. Do it around mid to late spring, 3 times, once a week for 3 weeks. Leave it alone. You're going to have enough of that more acid condition. It's not going to make it go off the charts. But what it's going to do is it's going to give it just enough of that acid so that the plant's going to have more of a vibrant flower. Now, as far as producing the flower, it's the same with everything else. Get something that's got the high phosphorus content. Water soluble is one. Again, the Miracle-Gro Bloom Booster is one of them. I wish we had them as a sponsor. But anyhow, I mean, use that once a week for about 3 weeks. And instead of having 20 flowers, you'll have 200 of them and large.
I've got something else to add about fertilizing, but I want to get into when. Now that we know what we're planting and where we're planting, when we're planting is a good one.
Mm-hmm. Now, you want me to jump in on this, or do you want to?
Well, I think it's
we could go by book learning, or we could go by experience.
Okay, so I will give you the book. You give me the experience.
Go for the book.
So here's what I learned: that early spring, late fall is the best time, not the only times, but the best times. And I had it suggested to me that when you first get them from the store, no matter what they are, prune them down to 6 inches. This is before you plant them. You prune it down to 6 inches. It supposedly helps them make them stronger and bushier. And then when you plant them, they love water. And this gentleman was suggesting 2 gallons a week and also suggesting using liquid potash and a little bit of calcium, maybe even from a banana peel that you ate while you were gardening for bigger blossoms.
That's potassium, and that doesn't give the bigger blossoms. What it does is it works higher, works best on the root system of the plant.
But that's calcium from the banana.
That's potassium from the banana, too.
Well, also.
All right. So it's the phosphorus that's going to stimulate. Now, there's phosphorus in banana peels, too. But it's primarily what they have is the potassium, the calcium, and the phosphorus. It's you can put a whole banana in there, and you're going to benefit all the way around from it. The plant will. Nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. Potassium is the last number in all the fertilizers. And notice that when you have a plant, most of the fertilizers that they have out there do not have a high amount of potassium in it. So you are basically stating that you're going to be compensating or compensating for what's not there.
Right.
And so that's an excellent idea. I mean, why not? I mean, you can go and buy it's cheap fertilizer. You go out there and buy bananas in the bulk right there, eat 2 of them, drop the rest of them in the ground and let them take their own course.
That was kind of the book and a little bit of side experience. What, do you disagree with anything I said?
I don't disagree, but I don't think everybody has to watch those like clockwork because it basically turns people off. I don't want to spend that much time doing that. All I want to do is look at them, trim them, fertilize them, and make the people, if they look really good, I want people to see me working outside. If they look crummy, I'm not going to do it. But here's the thing. There's one thing that maybe you have learned since you've been out in your wife's nursery or garden center.
Yeah.
When you see those plants outside on the tables in the open environment, the nurseries or the garden centers are probably telling you that it's a safe time to put them in the ground. When they're under a shelter, do not put them in the ground right away. So,
and that's very interesting because we get them early enough, and because people like doing them in early spring, when we first bring them out, they are outside in an enclosed porch.
In the enclosed porch.
And then as it gets warmer outside, we transfer them out into shade cloth area. Yeah.
But it's still exposed to the wind, the heat, the lack of heat, the sunlight, etc.
All right. I have a planting mistake.
You do.
Somebody.
Green side up. Let's just leave it at that, okay?
So this other person suggested that when you're planting that you put no additives in the planting hole, just compost.
Well, compost is a mix of all additives.
That's what I was saying.
Duh.
I was like, well, yeah, so on that one.
Yeah.
Planting mistake, you have to remove any and all containers that plant came in.
Yeah, people generally have been planting. I can't believe that. But they just didn't want it to grow bigger.
Well, some of them are like mesh or even a peat type box.
Years ago, we used to have 1 gallon, 3 gallon, 5 gallon, 25 gallon peat pots. They were compressed peat. And so you just drop it in the ground all together right there. That peat does not break down or decompose.
Not fast enough for the roots to go.
You take them out of every container that they're in.
They're too slow under the dissolving.
Right. It'll take 5 years for the peat pot to start to break down on a continued basis. But by that time, the roots of the plant are going around in this circle and it's killing itself.
This person dug them up because they weren't doing well and still saw the pot in there and the roots going nowhere. So he's like, all right, take the pot out and you replant it and flourish.
No matter what container. They used to sell Jackson Perkin roses in those cardboard containers that were made out of peat. They'd drop them in the ground, take the top of it off, unzip it to make it look like it was just straight peat moss that it's growing in. Those containers did not break down fast enough for the rose bush to kick in either. Any plant you get in a container, make darn sure you take the container off and lightly you know, loosen up the root system on it and then drop it into the ground at the soil level that they're at right at the point.
Mike just said a 18-word sentence, and I can do it in three. Free the roots.
That has been used in college verses for a lot of things, Scott.
Free the roots. Okay. So here's another tidbit on planting. It's suggested that those plants, you know, that bloom late, or maybe I'm not even going to say the repeat bloomer. I'm just going to say the late one, that you plant them deeper.
Like a tomato.
Yes. Sort of like 3 inches down, they were suggesting.
I wouldn't go that far down beyond where the soil level's at, that in the container that they're in.
Yeah.
Meaning if it's level with the container, you go 3 inches deeper?
Yes.
I think that's a little too much.
But, all right.
But no, I want to hear their justification, though.
I don't remember the justification. I just remember the tip.
Folks, just remember to plant the green side up at all times. Take it out of the container and lightly loosen up the roots.
I'm going to tell you, there's also clematis bush, not just clematis vines. They want you to plant deeper, like the vines 3 inches down. All others and the bush style clematis, you plant ground level. Top of the pot is right. The top of the ground.
Right. Now, the late bloomers that you're talking about are like those autumn glories that you have out there. And the reason is those are they accelerate in their growth, but they also stimulate rhizomes. The deeper you plant them, the more rhizomaceous activity is going to occur. In other words, it's going to sprout out horizontally from both the root and from the stalk that you're going to be burying a little bit deeper. You're going to stimulate some more rhizomes. You're not going to stimulate new crawlers on that, but from the rhizomes will stimulate new crawlers or creepers that are going to climb upward and outward. The later the bloomer, the faster the activity that they're going to create more leaf and vine and stem. The earlier the bloom, the more delicate it's going to look like. And I'm strongly going to recommend, people generally say, well, I cut it down every year. And you know, that's cutting away an awful lot of energy. I mean, don't take any more than 1/4 of the entire area away at one time.
Now, it's interesting, if you caught on, I said also the bush style.
I was going to ask you a question on that.
I didn't know there was a bush
style. I didn't know there was a bush style either. What zone can that grow in?
Lots of them. I haven't really looked into this, and this is something our listeners can do on their own, but from what I found, it's more of a hybrid, and it doesn't need to grow on an item. It doesn't wrap. It's truly more of a bush with the flower on.
Okay, that makes sense.
So it's a clematis hybrid. One that I found, Proven Winners has one called Stand By Me. So,
well,
as an alternative for people if they want to look that up.
For those that don't know the difference between heirloom and hybrid, hybrid is genetically modified. An heirloom is just the continuation of the same type, variety of plant genetically without man or anybody, scientist, getting involved in creating something unique. I'll give you an example. The reason that I'm not likely to be promoting any type of a hybrid clematis. I don't know what it's like. I'd like people to tell me if they've got them, what they're like, but I'm afraid because I got a hybrid variety of coneflower, nice pastel color, beautiful. I put it in the ground for 3 years. That darn thing's been all over the place, but it's not that beautiful pastel color. It's a bright yellow all over the place. And it looks like I've been planting native plants all over the place. So be careful when you get a hybrid, to understand that you're not going to be having the same type of a plant that you have from an heirloom.
Right.
So the heirlooms are basically going to be the vine varieties. There are hybrids of those too, because they're dabbling with color and different types of, you know, shapes of the flower, different types of, for instance, I was looking at one that's just drooping. I mean, part of it is that the vine itself, the flower, it creates a flower. The flower, the specialty of that flower is it's not that it's open and it's beautiful. It's got this teardrop droop that slowly opens up randomly while it is still, you know, the new flowers are still out there just drooping in that cup. It is so cool. And it's a lavender colored flower. It's called the Pamela Jackman. Now that boy has a blue black flower, but the drooping tight buds on it, and it will open up randomly throughout, and they're gorgeous. But then they also have that little drooping closed look of the flower that makes it so unique too. So if you like something that's going to be a little dark, a little almost black, it's a velvety black against the nice green that you have of the leaves plus the yellow stem, it's just absolutely gorgeous. Now that's the Pamela Jackman, and it can grow anywhere from zones 4 through 9. What zone are we in? We're stuck between a zone 4 and a 5.
Pruning, we've kind of talked about that a little bit. You said don't do much at all, which is pretty much everything I learned, unless you want to restart the vine from
the crown.
Yeah, or it's you find a vine that's unknown and just cut it down and see what it does.
But you don't cut it down like a grass. I mean, the crown continues to expand, but it's only going to expand for so long.
Five to six inches is what you want to, if you're going to take it all the way down, 5 to 6 inches.
Wow. Remember, you're not going to have all that cluster of vines that are going to be coming up. You're going to have individual vines coming up.
Right.
And you're going to have to retrain them. And they're going to start leaning out into the lawn, or they're going to start leaning out into the neighbor's property. Most of them have them along the fence line or out right. the back and the way back so that they can see them. And the neighbors are going to benefit from it too. So if you have an unsightly chain link or even a stockade fence is going to be tough. I would take the twine and put a few nails in it and go up and down, up and down, up and down so that the clematis can attach itself to it. Once they start to get a little bit above and beyond the height of the fence, yeah, give it a haircut. Cut it down about 2 feet beyond down. And let it start crawling outward. Force it. The more you trim up top, the more horizontal growth you're going to get. The more you trim on the sides, the more vertical growth you're going to get. If you do both of them, it'll fill out more from the inside.
I had a customer come in. She was buying a couple of things and checking out, and she asked when our clematis were coming in. So I told her, and I said, well, I'm just a little curious. We're going to be recording a podcast here in the next day or so about clematis. What do you do? You know, just like, I like the experienced people at home telling us what to do.
So do I. That's where I get most of it.
That's where I love getting this information. And she goes, you know, I don't do much at all. She goes, I give it a little haircut here and there. She goes, I fertilize it once in the early spring. And she goes, I just let it go. So she, A, must have planted the correct thing in the right spot, and she goes, it just takes off, and it just does its thing, and it's gorgeous.
But you see, it can be a little confusing because they're saying, well, they like it sunny if you want the flower, but they don't. You got to keep that root shade. Don't freak out. Use your own learned experience that you're going to find by growing one. If it doesn't make it, maybe the dog shouldn't be going to the bathroom on it. But, I mean, you know, you're watching it. If you see it, then go ahead and wash it off. But the whole thing here is the experience on watching them grow, watching them go into flower. And like you said, a little bit goes a long way. Do not overdo anything. Too much is not good. So don't panic over it. Let it take its own course. Maybe help it along a little bit by weaving in and out of some things so that the vine and the leaves can attach themselves to it and support it. And just enjoy the darn thing.
Fertilizing, fertilizing I've learned is, even from this lady and several others, is best in the spring. You can just use a general all-purpose granular fertilizer.
Is there any like a
quarter to a half cup spread around the base? However, they also do like eggshells.
Why?
I don't know why, Mike.
It's similar to the banana.
I was going to say, is it similar to the banana?
It's the potassium and calcium. Yeah.
Okay. You can also use Espoma's rose tone, Mike.
Now, why would you do that?
Again, I don't know, Mike. Tell me. No, you're the expert. You're supposed to be telling me.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, number one.
Why the rose tone? And why is rose tone considered vine family?
We're gonna get Scott out of this on this one on his own, and he's gonna be surprised on how he's gonna. What is in Espoma rose? What is? I'm not gonna school you. I'm gonna have you tell me. What is in the Espoma fertilizer is the rose tone and most all of the nutrients that they sell. What is in there that is unique to most all fertilizers? Because I know you know this. What is the main ingredient that is so magical in Espoma? It needs it. Yeah, what is it? What do you think it is?
It's a mycorrhizae.
Bingo! All right, when are you going to be the journeyman? This is fantastic. See, you knew that all along. What does mycorrhizae do?
Well, mycorrhizae attaches itself to the root of the plant and attracts other nutrients from the soil, saying, come here. It's like, you know those fish and the...
It's luring it.
It's a lure. The fish have the lure on top of their head. It looks like a little worm.
Right.
And then the other fish comes and grabs it, and then that fish grabs him.
Yeah. This mycorrhizae.
Same deal.
It's a nature's wonder. It's all over the place. It's just that, you know, what I'm basically saying is mycorrhizae has a symbiotic relationship with the root system of the plant. It attaches itself to the roots, and it will basically take the nutrients that the plant is not accessing or taking advantage of and force feeding it to the plant. And it's nature's way of saying, here, you need this. It's like a grandmother giving us cookies.
Yeah, it contains like six different colony.
Oh, many, many. Yeah, and each colony is multi-millions of spores.
Yes.
Or bacilli.
6 million colony-forming units, which are also known as CFUs.
What'd you tell me?
CFU. See if you know this answer.
I would wash my... Your mouth needs washing
out.
No,
the mycorrhizae stuff is great because I had some... What did I put on those? It was the grasses when I first got the grasses.
Yes,
they weren't taking in my sand area, and it was very shady. And
you used rosetone.
Did I use...
Or was it halitone?
It was halitone.
Halitone.
But I also used some liquid form of something that you had me pick up. I think it was Fox Farm product.
It was a Fox Farm product.
But that direct mycorrhizae worked like a charm because they took off after that. But rose tone, in a nutshell, is what they also recommend.
And your plant's going to kick butt. And she said to do it. The lady said to do it not three times, but usually in the spring, and that's it. Leave it alone.
So wrapping this up, I got two more points that we need to talk about.
Go.
One is disease, but the first one is clematis can be a little troublesome to dogs.
That's why they pee on them.
They have apparently a irritating glioside, if I said that correctly.
I don't know.
Which causes drooling, vomiting, diarrhea.
Oh, when they eat it.
And when then ingested, according to the Pet Poison Helpline.
Now, if a dog does eat that, and I've not noticed whatever the glio, whatever it is, but cats and dogs, if they taste something first and it's awful, they'll spit it out.
Right.
Unless somebody force feeds them this, they're not going to go over there and munch on it.
Yeah, you'll be safe. It says it has a bitter taste and it's displeasing to dogs, but...
And you can't be too careful.
Your Gus would probably say, I don't care. I'm going to eat it.
I'm going to eat it all. And you know what? Yeah, and first thing it happens, right on the carpet. Mm-hmm. I guess it didn't go down well. No, they're not going to, if they do eat it, it's not necessarily going to knock them out, but it's not exactly the thing. I wouldn't, if you wanted to put it in the yard and you've got dogs and you've got cats, I have no problem.
I would
put it in there.
It's not that bad.
No. Okay, what was the other one?
Well, I'm going to get to that one.
Okay.
While we're still on animals of sorts, it's reported, and you tell me, you may know better, you probably know better, that clematis don't have many pests that will attack it.
They don't.
A little bit of aphids, a little bit of scale. Deer do not like them. Slugs do not like them. The only troubles you may have are with rabbits and
chipmunks. Starting out. And the reason is there is when they start lower, especially if you're cutting it down to that 6 inches, they only go after the fresh new growth.
Yep, nibbling on those new young shoots.
Just saying, you know, if you want to cut it down to 6 inches, go ahead. I'm just saying cut it down a little bit from the top to stimulate more growth. That's all.
Tall enough that Chippendale will not be able to reach it.
Well, they'll be able to climb it, and the birds love it. I'm serious. The birds love it. And did you know that the little button that they have there is actually a seed head, too? Now, if it's an heirloom, it will rejuvenate. If it's a hybrid, it won't.
So I mentioned clematis wilt,
right?
Which is a fungal disease that actually it was kind of interesting when you were talking about like moisture evaporating up and getting on the underside of the leaves. This actually enters the plant at the soil line.
Then it's a fungus or a virus?
Fungal disease.
Okay.
It will cause all the plant's leaves and stems to suddenly turn black.
Do you know that if you're going to have any kind of a disease, it would probably be best to have the fungal disease because that's controlled. A viral disease is not controlled.
Yeah, and it will only affect it during the current growing season. It'll be fine next year. Isn't that kind of like black spot on maple trees?
No, tar spot on maple trees.
Tar spot, yes.
Black spot on roses. I mean, it's something. Now, the roses and crab apples, did you know that the crab apple or the apple tree is actually a rose bush? But they get the same disease. So on a clematis, you can get basically the tar spot. Yeah, that's a fungus. The clematis wilt basically is something that's more, it's kind of like zits on a teenager. eventually it'll go away. But you can treat it with any of the rose fungicides if you want to, like Daconil and rose and vegetable fungicides. They got them pre-mixed, and if you want to, you can spray it. But you got to let some air get to that area, though. Whatever's causing that is because of the lack of air circulation and heavy moisture.
Which comes back to our feet in the shade saying with people possibly putting the clay pots and stuff over
there. Yeah, or heavy mulch around the base of it.
They usually find no wilt on early bloomers because it hasn't been around to get too humid, imagine.
You're right.
If you don't want troubles, get an early bloomer.
Well, when you live in the Great Lakes region of the Midwest, the humidity is about as bad as what Florida is in the middle of the summertime. So, make sure you got plenty of areas air circulation is a trick. You're not going to, when they say that, if you look up and do your research, there's a lot of websites that are out there, or even on Google, they'll tell you a number of different things that are going to confuse the hell out of you. A lot of them are recommending that you go ahead and allow them to grow on or in bushes. Well, wait a minute. You don't put it on the inside of the plant because there's, first of all, what are you lacking? You're lacking sunlight. Number two, you're competing for root space. And number three, it's a little itty bitty thing that isn't going to make it out there. You got to have it toward the outside of the plant and then you got to help it along.
Train it to go
right
up that bush.
Right.
However, if you're training it to go up a trellis or something, then you plant it directly underneath.
Okay. Bingo.
Okay. One quick thing that I just want to clarify before we wrap up this show is when planting, I had suggested that they love water, like 2 gallons a week. I mean, it just loves, take it for what it is. If you just want to do 1 gallon, I'm sure that's fine. However, as it gets older, overwatering and waterlogging can become a root problem.
You know, you're right. And I'm becoming more and more impressed with your knowledge base here. However, it would turn people off to go, I got to measure exactly 2 gallons of water and I got to do it in a week. Bunk. You know what the first indicators of if a plant needs water is and it's going to rebound is quicker than the dickens? The wilting of the leaves. And you give it a drink, within 5 to 10 minutes, it's right back up. It's telling you what it needs. And that way you're not overwatering it. But you're not keeping it into a stressful situation. And you're only going to have to do that when you first plant the suckers.
Right.
Until that root system comes in. And that's where the rose tone comes into play with the mycorrhizae. You're accelerating, helping to get the ample root system. What would normally take 3 seasons to start that, you'll have a really dense root system started in 1 season.
So now we can call our listeners clematis.
Plural clematai.
Because clematis means intelligence. And after listening to this educational show for the past hour, you are all now 1 hour smarter about clematis.
Are they, what do you consider them? They're not, they won't be journeymen.
No, they're just clematis.
They're first year rookies?
They're just clematis, Mike.
Okay, we're going to stick with the clematis.
All right, everybody, that's going to wrap up that show. We are working on several exciting things.
What do we have coming up?
I don't know. No, I do know. Hellebores, zonal geraniums, I'm going to throw this one on Mike. Goldenrod flowers.
There's multiple varieties of those. Those are, they're actually planting those back in, and they, there's metro parks out there. They're going native. There's about three varieties that they're putting in. Some are small, some are tall, and people claim to be allergic to them. Well, so be it.
Once we get a contract finalized, sounds very legal, but we're still in the talking stages. We have an author that is interested in coming on the show. Mike just got the book today. I'm just teasing it. I'm not letting any clues out yet.
Yeah, but you want to know the name of it?
No, don't want to know the name.
Let's who wrote the book?
Until it's confirmed and good to go, we're going to keep it as a tease.
Okay, we're going to keep it under lid.
Under lid.
Okay, how many more teases are we going to go through? Because this is kind of interesting. This is really a neat looking book. Now, if I only knew how to read.
That tends to help. So everybody, until next episode.
Goodbye, everybody.
All right, everybody. Remember what I always say.
Green
thumbs up.
Oh, green thumbs up. That's right.
Thanks for listening to Your Midwest Garden. If you like today's conversation, please share this podcast with friends and family. And don't forget to click on the subscribe button so you won't miss any future episodes. Plus, if you have any show topics you'd like us to discuss, head on over to our sponsor's Facebook page, which is Black Diamond Garden Center, and message them your topic idea. For all of us at Your Midwest Garden Podcast, I'm Michael Rourke, the Garden Guy. Hope you enjoyed today's conversation.